the hour, we're going to show you how to spice up the kitchen by imagining hidden dangers. But first, we've got a special treat for you.
Oh, yes, we do. You know, the original copy of the Star Spangled Banner goes on display this week at the National Archives. Restoration of the original manuscript has revealed there are actually multiple new verses that have not been seen or heard in over 150 years.
That's right. And joining us now is the director of the exhibit, Susan Ekman. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Good morning. Now, Susan, most of us, of course, know that the Star Spangled Banner was written by Francis Scott Key during a battle in the War of 1812.
That's how we got Rackett's Red Glare.
Yep.
Right. And the recently discovered verses go into a lot more description of that battle. Mm-hmm. For instance, here's a clip from the sixth verse, recorded especially for our exhibit.
Oh, that's great. Well, let's take a listen.
Yeah.
Tear the heads from our foes, let their hot blood gush forth, chop their limbs from their trunks, drag the bodies from horses.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, Key was clearly very affected by what he saw during that battle.
Oh, really?
For instance, the entire 10th verse is basically just a very detailed description of a bayonet wound.
Oh, very intense.
Yes, by that point, he'd been listening to the screams and cries of his dying friends for well over 12 hours.
Wow, now that's very neat. Let's listen to it a little bit more.
So we beat them with chains, burn their eyes out with flames, and we laughed as they screamed while we raved who remains.
Mm, I like it. And how many new verses are there now?
Well, there are 18 true verses. After that, something seems to have snapped in Key's mind, and it just turns into a series of drawings.
So an artist as well as a patriot.
Oh. Yes, here he seems to be representing himself as the king of a family of rats that are spreading bubonic plague across England.
Oh, look at those.
Oh, very detailed.
Yes.
Right. Now, the original song is not the only thing that's on display in this new exhibit.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's right. We're also showing a very rare painting depicting Key meeting with John Adams.
Mm. Wow.
Well, the display is on until the end of the month at the National Archives. Catch it while you can.
Right.
Susan Ekman, thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
Up next, could your teen be texting with the devil?
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide is a suicide.
There are moments which mark your life. Moments when you realize nothing will ever be the same. And time is divided into two parts. Before this, and after this. Now sometimes you can feel such a moment coming. That's the test. Oh, so I tell myself. I tell myself that at times like that, strong people keep moving forward anyway. No matter what they're going to find.
The latest GOP debate concludes with the candidates wrestling a squealing pig to the ground and slaughtering it. Brendan Fraser signs on to star in a new pre-movie trivia question, and a snooze button is smacked like it delivers morphine. Welcome to the pandering afterthought that is this edition of the Onion Week in Review. According to a report published this week, researchers have definitively concluded that it, all of it, is some kind of sick joke. The Princeton study suggests that the entirety of existence, including time, marriage, migratory patterns of birds, continental drift, life itself, photosynthesis, human society, and the changing of the seasons, are all part of a massive twisted ruse orchestrated by a spiteful cosmos.
Look at you morons, taking this stupid video for your pointless newspaper. Everything's a joke. I'm a joke. You're a joke. The whole universe is a joke.
We at the Onion Week in Review are compelled to inform viewers that while this entire segment is indeed one small part of the giant perverse joke, the upshot is that the next minute of your life will be no more or less pointless than if you were to spend it with a loved one, mentoring an at-risk youth, or simply wallowing in your own feculence.
The Masturbation Network, keeping America baiting for 300 years. And now, Sweet Bang Tube.
Oh yeah, give me some. Cut me a piece. Oh, that's... Go away, baiting! Damn it.
I
Think we have a question here on international affairs, hopefully.
We've come to a position where we're in a new world order
everywhere, like such as.
And I'd like to know what the candidates feel our position is in this new world order
everywhere, like such as,
and what our responsibilities are as a superpower.
Mr. President?
Well, we have come to that position. Since I became president, 44 countries have gone democratic. No longer totalitarian, no longer living under dictatorship or communist rule. This is exciting. This is new world order to me means freedom and democracy.
Yes, to the new world order.
I think we will have a continuing responsibility as the only remaining superpower to stay involved. If we pull back in some isolation and say we don't have to do our share or more than our share anymore, I believe you're going to just ask for conflagration that we'll get involved in the future. NATO, for example, has kept the peace for many, many years, and I want to see us keep fully staffed in NATO so we'll continue to guarantee the peace in Europe. But the exciting thing is the fear of nuclear war is down, and you hear all the bad stuff that's happened on my watch. I hope people will recognize that this is something pretty good for mankind. I hope they'll think it's good that democracy and freedom is on the move. And we're going to stay engaged, as long as I'm president, working to improve things. You know, it's so easy now to say, hey, cut out foreign aid. We got a problem at home. I think the United States has to still be have the Statue of Liberty as a symbol, caring for others. We're right this very minute, we're sending supplies in to help these little starving kids in Somalia. We're trying to get, it's the United States that's taken the lead in humanitarian aid into Bosnia. We're doing this all around the world. And yes, we got problems at home. And I think I got a good plan to help fix those problems at home. But because of our leadership, because we didn't listen to the freeze.
Everybody be cool, this is a robbery!
The nuclear freeze group, do you remember? Freeze it.
Any of you hypocrites move! And I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you!
Back in about the late 70s. Freeze.
That's the cool breeze of freedom right there.
Don't touch it. We're gonna lock it in now or else we'll have war. President Reagan said no. Peace through strength. It worked. The Soviet Union is no more, and now we're working to help them become totally democratic through the Freedom Support Act that I led on, a great Democratic ambassador, Bob Strauss over there, Jim Baker, all of us got this thing passed through cooperation, Ross.
A giant sucking sound.
Work with cooperation, and you're for that, I'm sure, helping Russia become democratic. So the New World Order to me means freedom and democracy.
Chaos and order.
Keep engaged. Do not pull back into isolation, and we are the United States, and we have a responsibility to lead and to guarantee the security. If it hadn't been for us, Saddam Hussein would be sitting on top of 3/5 of the oil supply of the world, and he'd have nuclear weapons.
No!
Stop it already!
First of all, Rand Paul shouldn't even be on this stage. He's number 11. He's got 1% in the polls, and how he got up here, there's far too many people.
His visceral response to attack people on their appearance, short, tall, fat, ugly.
I never attacked him on his look, and believe me, there's plenty of subject matter right there.
The one guy that had some special interest that I know of, that tried to get me to change my views on something, that was generous and gave me money, was Donald Trump. He wanted casino gambling in Florida.
I did. Want
yes, you did.
Totally false.
You wanted it, and you didn't get it.
I would have gotten
it. I was opposed to casino gambling before, during, and after. When he asked Florida to have casino gambling, we said no.
Wrong.
Excuse me. One second.
No.
I didn't want to get
Donald, you cannot take
more energy tonight. I like that.
If I were sitting at home and watching this back and forth, I'd be inclined to turn it off. What else is it other than the criminalization of her faith
and the exaltation of the faith of everyone else who might be a Fort Hood shooter or a detainee at Gitmo.
I will take care of women. I respect women. I will take care of women.
Women's income grew 3 times faster than national average when I was governor.
So why did you say it? Why did you say it? I know, but why did you say it? I heard it myself. Why did you say it?
Child support.
Donald Trump said the following about you, quote, "Look at that face. Would anyone vote for that? Can you imagine that? The face of our next president."
I think women all over this country heard very clearly what Mr. Trump said.
I think she's got a beautiful face, and I think she's a beautiful woman.
Hey, there's something awfully screwy going on around here.
I think you'd even be talking about illegal immigration if it weren't for me.
Immigration did not come up in 2016 because Mr. Trump brought it up.
I'm a very militaristic person, but you have to know when to use the military.
If I'm elected president, every single Supreme Court justice will faithfully follow the law and will not act like philosopher kings.
So 40 years ago, I smoked marijuana, and I admit it. I'm sure that other people might have done it and may not want to say it in front of 25 million people. My mom's not happy that I just did.
So we are not going to destroy our economy. We are not going to make America a harder place to create jobs in order to pursue policies that will do absolutely nothing. Nothing to change our economy, to change our climate, to change our weather, because America's a lot of things. The greatest country in the world, absolutely. But America is not a planet.
So I'm all for vaccines, but I'm also for freedom.
The beautiful child went to have the vaccine and came back and a week later got a tremendous fever, got very, very sick, now is autistic.
He's an okay doctor.
Okay. What woman would you like to see on the $10 bill?
That's an easy one. I'd put my wife on there.
I'd put my mother on there.
Governor Bush.
I would go with Ronald Reagan's partner, Margaret Thatcher. Probably illegal, but what the heck.
What would you want, Governor Christie, I'll start with you, your Secret Service code name to be?
I would just say Trueheart.
Secretariat.
Harley. I love riding Harleys.
Justice never sleeps.
That's a mouthful, but okay.
Ever ready. It's very high energy, Donald.
But surely if politicians used words like holler, swallow back, check this out, all my peeps in your cribs, all your mofos out there, swallow this, booyakasha wagwan, then people would hear it and understand, innit?
because you better be able to lead our country on the first day. Not 6 months from now, not a year from now. On the first day in office, our president could very well confront a national security crisis.
Yeah, Marco Rubio used his time to tell his story first and foremost. It's hard to figure out who a loser is when you got 11 people on the stage. What do you think, Matt?
I actually think the loser in this was Donald Trump. He looked like a silent film star doing a smell test throughout the course of this debate. Every single expression he had, all of the different emotions he had, and the other thing he looked was tired. He looked like he was at a Starbucks line where the coffee was too late.
He complained about the length of the debate this morning.
And I think that's a big problem for him in the aftermath of this.
I've got a different loser. First of all, this was not Trump's best performance, but he didn't have any major gaffes. And when you're the front runner, you just need to not make a big mistake. To me, the loser was Scott Walker.
I mean,
Scott Walker has fallen furthest and fastest of all the candidates since the last debate. He needed a breakthrough, and he just didn't.
And a lot of people watching Jeb Bush last night think over the 2 hours had some great moments, but also some missed opportunities. Hard to say how he worked out.
I'd call him the most improved candidate on the stage.
Which is never a good. It smells like a third grade when you failed something. Yeah.
Yeah, election time's coming. Who you gonna vote for? Yeah, if I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday. They go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, yeah. Instead of spending billions on the war, I can use that money so I can feed the poor. 'Cause I know some so poor. When it rains, that's when they shower, scream and fight the power. That's when the vulture devours. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, yeah. I know some soldiers that sleep but they can't dream, wake up with screams, sounds of M16. So take this medal of honor for your bravery. I wish you the best, kid, you and your family. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president.
But the radio won't play this, they call it rebel music. How can you refuse it? Children of Moses, tell the children the truth. The truth, it's not all that bling that's diamond. Yeah. Tell them the truth, the truth. Most of y'all wear cubic zirconia.
Take it off.
Tell
now.
Them the truth, the truth. Yeah, your soul is worth more than diamonds.
Yeah. If I was president, all blacks, I had reparation, no segregation. Feed the nation so there's no famine. Muslims, Jews, Christians, with all whole hands. Every week on the beach, party by the sand. Word up, take trips on Air Force One. Don't need to bring the homeless with no sneaks to Air Force One. Better schools in the hood, better teachers for the classes. Making money, paying no tax. Find the best scientists, tell them come up with an answer. I want the cure for AIDS and cancer. But I gotta watch my back. Snipers on the hill with the steel, waiting to check.
If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, I feel the rain coming, let me play my guitar for them right now.
Let's go.
Oh, sounds like suicide.
I used to believe in freedom of speech. until I had to pay my first phone bill. That's cool, because I heard reality only makes you stronger if it don't kill. Do you think nature cares more for the mountain or the molehill? Does it favor the rabbit that plows the earth when it's alive, or the one that fertilizes the soil when it becomes roadkill? It appears the night and day don't discriminate. Imagine if the sun and moon had to debate, labor over mandate, who was the best candidate to rise at the break of dawn. But then again, based on how infrequently the sun shines in Britain, maybe that statement itself is debatable. But the above examples are merely to highlight that we are probably the species with the most autonomy in the whole of the Earth's geography. So why do we struggle with its philosophy to the point where it becomes a foreign ideology when even nature practices democracy? All I'm saying is that, like a German football fan in a pub in Shoreditch during the 2010 World Cup matchup between the two countries, our human emotions and democracy find it difficult to coexist, causing us to make a mockery of this. So this raises the question, did Atticus Finch kill a mockingbird for a concept that doesn't really exist? Ironic how human nature and the laws of nature conflict. Our judgments are clouded by a lion's share of pride, rather than following the example of the lion and its pride. I used to believe in democracy, till my mum would give my sister the biggest chicken in the soup, simply because she was a lot bigger. And that's how we learnt democracy worked in our social groups, only hold value to the views of those who were most popular. And that's why we find it difficult to make any progress, and the adults didn't do much to facilitate the process, because we were always shot down at the first sign of protest. But when bees gather honey for the queen, they don't have to worry about pay cut, possibly redundancy, a recession. Have you ever seen a rise in young bee unemployment? So if nature can get it right, maybe it's not the way we've been practicing it all along, but maybe it's the mentality we've adopted towards it which is wrong. Because for us, it's not even about who or what we're voting for, it's more about what it represents and what we're hoping for. We're driven by emotions and our pride as people, but from the passenger seat, how much control do you really have to drive the vehicle? Because nature made some of us white and some of us black, some of us skinny and some of us the opposite of that. But nature didn't make us discriminate, put bombs on our back, or station troops in foreign lands. The only nature that causes that is human nature, and that's all the facts. Do you know that red deer herds only move when 60% of the adults stand up, effectively voting with their feet? Both baboons and apes do not select a male leader until the females in the group have had a chance to look and decide, and the feminists would probably have a chuckle at that, because we struggle in fact with a concept as simple as women's rights. We live in juxtaposition to the universe and its natural tendencies. So democracy works, but people don't. We'd rather focus on what divides us than what unites us, but what's inside us. Represented for the same spot where Mark Duggan was shot, where Damilola was stabbed, where Stephen Lawrence was dropped. When animals kill one another, it's either for survival or nourishment. When the rain beats down on the soil, it's merely to provide the seeds with some encouragement. Google the Baltic and the North Sea. Watch how they balance perfect with no need for establishment or congressman. Do you know the hermit crab does not grow its own shell? It wanders along and uses whatever it can for a shell, whether it be glass, bottles or cans. So effectively, this proved that recycling is also a naturalistic tendency, and we struggle with that as well. I had an argument with my friend who stated that our consciousness has allowed us to become supreme beings on this earth. And I responded, but animals eat, sleep, spend time with their family each week, travel the earth as they please. I spend more time texting some people than we actually speak. So is this consciousness really a gift or a curse? So before we look at democracy, let's look at hypocrisy. And we should realize that every problem we have on this earth, we are the responsible ones. And the only law we need to work on implementing is our natural ones. Because nature practices democracy. Human nature, as of yet, does not.
I'm Juliana Bacanas, filling in for Clifford Baines, who told me to say hello to all of you. A recent poll finds that many Capitol Hill lobbyists are fed up with politicians accepting their money and then not coming through with promised legislation. Are politicians failing our lobbyists?
The voice of the corporate lobbyist has long been ignored by the politicians.
Nowadays, as soon as the politicians get in office, they forget whose money put them there.
That's right. These lobbyists are going out every single day making sure that their corporate sponsorship is getting
through. Okay, but I don't think that we can just blame the members of Congress. I mean, honestly, I think the lobbyists have to stand up for themselves.
Oh, great, Duncan. Now we're blaming the lobbyists?
Well, I'm just saying that they need to stand up and not let these politicians walk all over them.
You know what? I'm going to agree with Duncan, because if they don't like the legislation that a politician is passing, that they need to find a different politician who will do what they want and accept tens of millions of dollars to fall in line with the lobbyists.
But they're doing everything they're supposed to be doing. They are paying millions, and they're not being listened
to. If you make a deal, you make a deal.
Since politicians are so unreliable, should lobbyists just cut out the middleman and start giving their money directly to voters?
Yes, pay the voters. Forget about the greedy politicians.
My rates.
Right.
$50 on the local vote, $75 for a national vote.
Oh, that's nothing.
What, are you serious?
500 is my lowest. 500.
It depends on what state I'm living in at the time.
An article in The Economist this week argues that nations also should cut out the middleman, and they should just put corporations in office.
Yeah. That could improve our image abroad.
Yeah, I personally respond to logos, and I would love to have a president that is identified more by a logo, you know, some kind of little shape, you know, like some kind of amorphous blob.
How dare you?
These nuts.
And both front runners overshadowed by...
Say it.
These nuts. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I had to
my
for details, we
you
turn
didn't have to sing it, Mo.
But that's how you're supposed to say it.
These nuts.
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 What?
These nuts.
First name is D's. Last name, Nuts.
Somebody actually filled out paperwork to run for president under the name D's Nuts.
Have you heard about candidate D's Nuts?
Yes, independent candidate D's Nuts. He's polling at 9%.
D's Nuts. There are about 500 random contenders out there, and it may seem like a joke, but some people have taken Mr. Nuts seriously.
Candidate named D's Nuts.
Oh, no.
Really? A candidate registered as an independent from Iowa has the legal name of D's Nuts.
No.
Almost 1 in 10 voters in North Carolina say they prefer D's Nuts.
That's right. 1 in 10 support D's Nuts for president.
D's Nuts. And a recent poll in North Carolina actually had him polling at about 9%.
You are kidding me.
This actually looks like a D's Nuts third party challenge. Might be able to swing the election a little bit.
Is he talented and skilled?
He may save the United States from whatever crisis we're in.
D's Nuts might be our savior.
That's it.
Vote Nuts. Thank you. Okay.
Vote for D's Nuts.
Or not.
Yes, that just happened. Journalism school, totally worth it.
He said he thinks he's Stokes and making a reservation at a motel there.
Hello.
What's up?
Nothing. What you doing?
Man, I'm just kicking it.
Mason, are y'all good? Thank you.
Nah, what you gonna do today?
I ain't gonna get my nails done.
See.
Why? What's up?
Hey, did what your name get at you yesterday?
Who?
These nuts.
Oh, shut up, nigga.
But I want to ask you one question. If I had some nuts hanging on the walls, what would I have, honey? I just, darling, you have some walnuts. She said, well, Daddy, if I had some nuts on my chest, would those be chestnuts? I said, hell yeah. She said, well, Daddy, if I had nuts under my chin, would those be chin nuts? I said, hell no. Then you'd have a chin in your mouth.
Chicky check, microphone check, one.
Chicky check, microphone check, two.
Chicky check, microphone check, three.
Check game from the notorious
D's Nuts.
Go away, Baton!
All right, now to the much anticipated new book from Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill. It's entitled Plenty Ladylike. It's really good. The Huffington Post Sam Stein got a first look at the book and reveals that McCaskill made a deal with her two daughters during the 2012 election. If then Congressman Todd Akin, remember him, won the GOP primary to be her Republican opponent, she would shotgun a beer. McCaskill writes, quote, after hugging my husband and calling my son in St. Louis, it was time for me to keep my promise. My daughters had to show me how to shotgun a beer. I did it, and we laughed until we cried. How do you shotgun a beer?
Is it chugging?
What
I don't know.
What is shotgun a beer?
How do
what?
I know this? I learned this at Wellesley. Don't you put a hole in the bottom of the beer and then do that?
Oh, okay.
And you suck it from the bottom?
Yeah, that's
okay.
One way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that
thank
one way?
You.
Or is that, or shotgun
well, my morning
when
is
you
complete
chug it
now.
Very, very fast? That's like
Alex?
All at once?
Wait, Alex is going to explain it. Acorn, go ahead.
You cut a hole in the side of the beer, and then you pop open the top so the airflow is much more and just comes out.
Is this something that happens in the control room?
So you speed up the departure of the beer from the can, and you have to drink it that fast.
Yeah.
It's talent.
CNBC's Michelle Caruso Cabrera, thank you very, very much.
Wellesley College. Wellesley. That's what they teach.
Okay. My among mom went there.
It's just so ridiculous.
What did you think about the ride?
It was great. And apparently, I've never been on live television before, but apparently sometimes I don't watch the news because I'm a kid, and apparently Grandpa just gives me the remote after we watch the Powerball.
Taking aim at abdomen, stumbling as I guilt trip from pixie dust particles laced with the American way of conformity. I lash out in defense of culture to stimulate dormancy, but I rest for a second and build on my mass collection. Ask questions of words since birth, compile images styled by each lesson. Cursed with illogical thinking and eyes of society. Crash parties of orthodox without the ignorant inviting me. The path I'm destined to walk is widening, but narrow to the close-minded. Hidden by brush and greenery, I can't see but my flow's finding. Blinded as I step through this forest of activists, dodging thorns of the norm, decoding life's puny form, disguised as a pacifist. After this confrontation with the beast of regret, attaining existence is the resort of taking a breath. So I hold back and don't inhale to see where life takes me. Elevate flesh to a level of stress, cause I believe life hates me.
Nothing's gonna change.
Lake I'm born to swim. Will I drown due to the obesity of my thought process as gravity pulls down to impede my self-conquest? Filling my pockets with payments of nonsense while the cover charts to this play of my life is time spent. At times I stand on the edge of this cliff and forget rap before I step across that threshold where rhyme bends and splits at. I try to evade the barricades and downplay the mishaps, convincing myself that the speeches are related to the syntax. My emotional famine is at an all-time height where I'm forced to rationalize between comfort and what's right. But when I write, I'm comfortable. Pen encompasses the agony of the turmoil, drenched existence of this Shakespearean tragedy. But does this hero die due to his flaws, or will I float in purgatory state before I take the fall? So for now I won't wait,
trudging through knee high Satan, contemplating whether I should stay on this frequency and change the station. Cause now I'm tuned into ruin, falling flat on my abstract. Too intimidated to press on, but not depressed enough to backtrack. The story too horrific to be laughed at, too surreal to be realistic. Dangling between an interval and its statistic. Will I see the light at the end of the tunnel? Well, has there been an avalanche that close off the outlet? Snuffing the option of if I'll have a chance to escape this fate. Or is it by choice I walk this road, wide yet enclosed, continuing to progress with Phil Froze?
Nothing's gonna change my world. Nothing's gonna change my world. Nothing's gonna change my world. Nothing's gonna change.
About 6% of everything you say and read and write is the. Is the most used word in the English language. About 1 out of every 16 words we encounter on a daily basis is the. The top 20 most common English words in order are the of and to. An is I, that it for you was with on, as have, but be they. That's a fun fact, a piece of trivia, but it's also more. You see, whether the most commonly used words are ranked across an entire language, or in just one book or article, almost every time a bizarre pattern emerges. The second most used word will appear about half as often as the most used, the third one-third as often, the fourth, one-fourth as often, the fifth, one-fifth as often, the sixth, one-sixth as often, and so on, all the way down. Seriously. For some reason, the amount of times a word is used is just proportional to 1 over its rank. Word frequency and ranking on a log-log graph follow a nice straight line, a power law. This phenomenon is called Zipf's Law. And it doesn't only apply to English. It also applies to other languages, like, well, all of them. Even ancient languages we haven't been able to translate yet. And here's the thing, we have no idea why. It's surprising that something as complex as reality should be conveyed by something as creative as language in such a predictable way. How predictable? Well, watch this. According to wordcount.org, which ranks words as found in the British National Corpus, sauce is the 5,555th most common English word. Now, here is a list of how many times every word on Wikipedia and in the entire Gutenberg corpus of tens of thousands of public domain books shows up. The most used word, the, shows up about 181 million times. Knowing these two things, we can estimate that the word sauce should appear about 30,000 times on Wikipedia and Gutenberg combined. And it pretty much does. What gives? The world is chaotic. Things are distributed in myriads of ways, not just power laws, and language is personal, intentional, idiosyncratic. What about the world and ourselves could cause such complex activities and behaviors to follow such a basic rule? We literally don't know. More than a century of research has yet to close the case. Moreover, Zipf's Law doesn't just mysteriously describe word use. It's also found in city populations, solar flare intensities, protein sequences and immune receptors, the amount of traffic websites get, earthquake magnitudes, the number of times academic papers are cited, last names, the firing patterns of neural networks, ingredients used in cookbooks, the number of phone calls people receive, the diameter of moon craters, the number of people that die in wars, the popularity of opening chess moves, even the rate at which we forget. There are plenty of theories about why language is Zipf-y, but no firm conclusions. And this video doesn't contain a definite explanation either. Sorry, I know that's a bummer since we appear to like knowing more than mystery. But that said, we also ask more than we answer. So let's dive into Ziff's ramifications, some related patterns, some possible explanations, and the depth of the mystery itself. Ziff's Law was popularized by George Ziff, a linguist at Harvard University. It is a discrete form of the continuous Pareto distribution, from which we get the Pareto principle. Because so many real-world processes behave this way, the Pareto principle tells us that, as a rule of thumb, it's worth assuming that 20% of the causes are responsible for 80% of the outcome. Like in language, where the most frequently used 18% of words account for over 80% of word occurrences. In 1896, Vilfredo Pareto showed that approximately 80% of the land in Italy was owned by just 20% of the population. It is said that he later noticed in his garden, 20% of his pea pods contained 80% of the peas. He and other researchers looked at other data sets and found that this 80-20 imbalance comes up a lot in the world. The richest 20% of humans have 82.7% of the world's income. In the US, 20% of patients use 80% of healthcare resources. In 2002, Microsoft reported that 80% of the errors and crashes in Windows and Office are caused by 20% of the bugs detected. A common rule of thumb in the business world states that 20% of your customers are responsible for 80% of your profits, and 80% of the complaints you receive will come from 20% of your customers. A book titled The 80-20 Principle even says that in a home or office, 20% of the carpet receives 80% of the wear. Oh, and as Woody Allen famously said, 80% of success is just showing up. The Pareto principle is everywhere. Which is good. By focusing on just 20% of what's wrong, you can often expect to solve 80% of the problems. A variety of different unrelated factors cause this to be true from case to case. But if we can get to the bottom of what causes some of them, maybe we'll find that one or more of those mechanisms is responsible for Ziff's law in language. George Ziff himself thought language's interesting rank frequency distribution was a consequence of the principle of least effort, the tendency for life and things to follow the path of least resistance. Ziff believed it drove much of human behavior and hypothesized that as language developed in our species, speakers naturally preferred drawing from as few words as possible to get their thoughts out there. It was easier. But in order to understand what was being said, listeners preferred larger vocabularies that gave more specificity so that they had to do less work. The compromise between listening and speaking, Ziff felt, led to the current state of language. A few words are used often, and many, many, many words are used rarely. Recent papers have suggested that having a few short, often used, predictable words helps dissipate information load density on listeners, spacing out important vocab so that the information rate is more constant. This makes sense, and much has been learned by applying the least effort principle to other behaviors, but later researchers argued that for language, the explanation was even more simple. Just a few years after Ziff's seminal paper, Benoit Mandelbrot showed that there may be nothing mysterious about Ziff's law at all, because even if you just randomly type on a keyboard, you will produce words distributed according to Ziff's law. It's a pretty cool point, and this is why it happens. There are exponentially more different long words than short words. For instance, the English alphabet can be used to make 26 one-letter words, but 26 squared two-letter words. Also, in random typing, whenever the space bar is pressed, a word terminates. Since there's always a certain chance that the spacebar will be pressed, longer stretches of time before it happens are exponentially less likely than shorter ones. The combination of these exponentials is pretty ziffy. For example, if all 26 letters and the spacebar are equally likely to be typed, after a letter is typed and a word has begun, the probability that the next input will be a space, thus creating a one-letter word, is just 1 in 27. And sure enough, if you randomly generate characters or hire a proverbial typing monkey, about 1 out of every 27, or 3.7% of the stuff between spaces, will be single letters. Two-letter words appear when, after beginning a word, any character but the spacebar is hit, a 26 in 27 chance, and then the spacebar. A three-letter word is the probability of a letter, another letter, and then a space. If we divide by the number of unique words of each length there can be, we get the frequency of occurrence expected for any particular word given its length. For example, the letter V will make up about 0.142% of random typing. The word Vsauce, 0.00000000993%. Longer words are less likely, but watch this. Let's spread these frequencies out according to the ranks they'd take up on a most often used list. There are 26 possible one-letter words, so each of the top 26 ranked words are expected to occur about this often. The next 676 ranks will be taken up by two-letter words that show up about this often. If we extend each frequency according to how many members it has, we get ziff. Subsequent researchers have detailed how changing up the initial conditions can smooth the steps out. Our mysterious distribution has been created out of nothing but the inevitabilities of math. So, maybe there is no mystery. Maybe words are just the result of humans randomly segmenting the observable world and the mental world into labels. And Zipf's law describes what naturally happens when you do that. Case closed. And as always, thanks for wait a minute. Actual language is very different from random typing. Communication is deterministic to a certain extent. Utterances and topics arrive based on what was said before. And the vocabulary we have to work with certainly isn't the result of purely random naming. For example, the monkey typing model can't explain why even the names of the elements, the planets, and the days of the week are used in language according to Zipf's law. Sets like these are constrained by the natural world, and they're not the result of us randomly segmenting the world into labels. Furthermore, when given a list of novel words, words they've never heard or used before, like when prompted to write a story about alien creatures with strange names, people will naturally tend to use the name of one alien twice as often as another, three times as often as another. Zipf's law appears to be built into our brains. Perhaps there is something about the way thoughts and topics of discussion ebb and flow that contributes to Zipf's law. Another way Zipfian distributions occur is via processes that change according to how they've previously operated. These are called preferential attachment processes. They occur when something, money, views, attention, variation, friends, jobs, anything really, is given out according to how much is already possessed. To go back to the carpet example, if most people walk from the living room to the kitchen across a certain path, furniture will be placed elsewhere, making that path even more popular. The more views a video or image or post has, the more likely it is to get recommended automatically or make the news for having so many views, both of which give it more views. It's like a snowball rolling down a snowy hill. The more snow it accumulates, the bigger its surface area becomes for collecting more, and the faster it grows. There doesn't have to be a deliberate choice driving a preferential attachment process. It can happen naturally. Try this. Take a bunch of paper clips and grab any two at random, link them together, and then throw them back in the pile. Now, repeat over and over again. If you grab paper clips that are already part of a chain, link them anyway. More often than not, after a while, you will have a distribution that looks Ziffian. A small number of chains contain a disproportionate amount of the total paperclip count. This is simply because the longer a chain gets, the greater proportion of the whole it contains, which gives it a better chance of being picked up in the future, and consequently made even longer. The rich get richer, the big get bigger, the popular get popularer. It's just math. Perhaps language's Ziff mystery is, if not caused by, at least strengthened by, preferential attachment. Once a word is used, it's more likely to be used again soon. Critical points may play a role as well. Writing and conversation often stick to a topic until a critical point is reached and the subject is changed and the vocabulary shifts. Processes like these are known to result in power laws. So, in the end, it seems tenable that all these mechanisms might collude to make Ziff's Law the most natural way for language to be. Perhaps some of our vocabulary and grammar was developed randomly, according to Mandelbrot's theory, and the natural way conversation and discussion follow preferential attachment and criticality, coupled with the principle of least effort when speaking and listening, are all responsible for the relationship between word rank and frequency. It's a shame that the answer isn't simpler, but it's fascinating because of the consequences it has on what communication is made of. Roughly speaking, and this is mind-blowing, nearly half of any book, conversation, or article will be nothing but the same 50 to 100 words, and nearly the other half will be words that appear in that selection only once. That's not so surprising when you consider the fact that one word accounts for 6% of what we say. The top 25 most used words make up about a third of everything we say, and the top 100? About half. Seriously, I mean, whether it's all the words in Wet Hot American Summer, or all the words in Plato's Complete Works, or in the Complete Works of Edgar Allan Poe, or the Bible itself, only about 100 words are used for nearly half of everything written or said. In Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, 44%, and in Tom Sawyer, 49.8% of the unique words used appear only once in the book. A word that is used only once in a given selection of words is called a hapax legomenon. Hapax legomena are vitally important to understanding languages. If a word has only been found once in the entire known collection of an ancient language, it can be very difficult to figure out what it means. Now, there is no corpus of everything ever said or written in English, but there are very, very large collections, and it's fun to find hapax legomena in them. For instance, and this probably won't be the case after I mention it, but the word quizzaciously is in the Oxford English Dictionary, but appears nowhere on Wikipedia, or in the Gutenberg corpus, or in the British National Corpus, or the American National Corpus, but it does appear, when searched, in just one result on Google. Fittingly, in a book titled Elder Speak that lists it as a rare word. Quizzaciously, by the way, means in a mocking manner, as in, the parodist rattled off quizzaciously, "Hey, Vsauce, Michael here, but who is Michael, and how much does here weigh?" It's a little sad that quizzaciously has been used so infrequently. It's a fun word, but that's the way things go in a Ziffian system. Some things get all the love, some get little. Most of what you experience on a day-to-day basis is forgotten, forgettable. The Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows, as it often does, has a word for this, olika, the awareness of how few days are memorable. I've been alive for almost 11,000 days, but I couldn't tell you something about each one of them. I mean, not even close. Most of what we do and see and think and say and hear and feel is forgotten at a rate quite similar to Zipf's law. Which makes sense. If a number of factors naturally selected for thinking and talking about the world with tools in a Zipfian way, it makes sense we'd remember it that way too. Some things really well. Most things hardly at all. But it bums me out sometimes because it means that so much is forgotten. Even things that at the time you thought you could never forget. My locker number, senior year. Its combination. The jokes I liked when I saw a comedian on stage. The names of people I saw every day 10 years ago. So many memories are gone. When I look at all the books I've read and realize that I can't remember every detail from them, it's a little disappointing. I mean, why even bother if the Pareto Principle dictates that my Zipfian mind will consciously remember pretty much only the titles and a few basic reactions years later? Ralph Waldo Emerson makes me feel better. He once said, "I cannot remember the books I've read any more than the meals I have eaten. Even so, they have made me."
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
What's that for? Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.